good for the earth.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Susan Chudy. Tonight, our topic is biochar, specially prepared charcoal that enhances soil and sequesters carbon.
Our guests will be Josie Storm, a walnut farmer from East Biggs, and Richard Roth from Chapmantown here in Chico. They'll tell us why they think biochar is important and how they are using it in the soil.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR listeners and by the COVID-conscious Chico Certified Farmers Markets, with year-round markets Wednesday and the North Valley Plaza at the North Valley Plaza, and Saturdays in Chico at 4th and Wall. The Chico Certified Farmers Market, bringing food lovers and farmers together since 1980.
And we want to remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily express the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, or programmers. We'll be back in just a moment to talk with Josie Storm.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you. Vegetables cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Oh,
table vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so vegetable.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and our topic tonight is biochar, what it is, what it's good for. Our guest on the phone from East Biggs is Josie Storm, who is working with her father on the family walnut farm to see how biochar can improve agricultural practices. Welcome, Josie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here.
Let's start. Please tell us a little bit about your family farm, and then we'll get into biochar.
Well, I grew up on our farm in East Biggs. My dad is a third-generation Gridley area farmer. He attended the School of Agriculture here at Chico State. And he's been farming rice, walnuts, and beef cattle in Biggs for around 40 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're on the farm yourself? Is that your primary occupation at this point?
Well, I'm a student at Butte College. It's my last semester there before I head to university to get my BS in environmental toxicology.
Okay.
I'm really interested in developing sustainable fuels and pesticides, and especially where that intersects with sustainable agriculture.
Great. Are there good preparatory courses for that at Butte College, or are you doing most of your general ed?
No. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of my preparation done.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, you wrote to us about biochar. You're enthusiastic about it. Tell us a little bit of what exactly is biochar.
So biochar is just a kind of charcoal that's used as a soil amendment. It can improve soil health and sequester carbon. It's made out of biomass. It's been burned in a special way that limits oxygen. It's called pyrolysis. It causes a lot of the carbon that normally gets emitted in smoke to actually be stored inside the char. And when it's incorporated in the soil, that carbon will be sequestered for thousands of years. It doesn't add any nutrients itself to the soil, but it has a lot of surface area due to a bunch of tiny little pockets and pores in its structure. And it just makes it easier for the soil to carry out a lot of essential processes, especially when it's inoculated with microbes and nutrients before you put it in the soil. It can reduce nutrient leaching, increase water availability, it'll raise the pH of acidic soils, and it's even been shown to reduce soil emissions of nitrous oxide and methane.
How and why did you become interested in its use? Where did you first encounter it, and then where did you go from there?
I think my dad actually just read about it in an agricultural magazine. And he saw it, and he was like, look at this. And my major is environmental toxicology, so I just think the chemistry is really cool. But for him, he saw that it could reduce input costs from water to chemical fertilizers, and they just keep getting higher each year. So that really intrigued him. Not to mention, every year we make a lot of biomass as a farmer, and it's a regulatory hassle to burn it in slash piles. So a clean burning biomass recycling technology that spits out a free soil enhancer, it just sounded like a genius solution to a lot of farmers' problems.
Sounds like genius to me. So how is biochar produced? So you have biomass, and that is like the leftovers of what you're not using from what you farm.
Yeah. So it's made in like an oven or a kiln, which can be made out of pretty much anything. There are a lot of different kinds of ovens and a lot of different kinds of feedstocks, and they all have their own advantages and drawbacks. But basically, the key part of it is burning the material at a really high temperature and with the absence of oxygen. Okay. And explaining the chemistry is kind of like daunting because I'm sure there's always someone who could explain it better, someone sitting at home shaking their head. But essentially the CO2 and the CH4, the methane that would have been emitted as smoke, it's decomposed. And so half of the molecule is released as pure oxygen or pure hydrogen gas, O2 or H2. And then the carbon half of that former greenhouse gas remains inside the actual structure of the charcoal. And that's how you get biochar, which is just 80% carbon.
So... Go ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And then just after, there's some really important post-processing steps. You have to inoculate it with nutrients because it's really good at attracting nutrients from the soil around it. So it'll if you put it into soil without inoculating it first, it wants to form an equilibrium with the soil, and it'll suck the nutrients out of your soil, which is the exact opposite of what you want to do. So you just have to throw it in a bin of compost for at least a couple weeks and let it get used to it. And then it'll take all of those nutrients and put it back in your soil.
So are there commercial places that do that? How do people get their hands on biochar?
Yeah, there's all kinds of different places, just from small individual farmers to giant companies. Industrial biochar kilns will be obviously a lot larger and will be more efficient because they can do continually take in feedstock and continually produce the char. And then they can also collect some other byproducts like biogas and bio oil. And then smaller commercial sized kilns like what we'll work with, they work on a batch by batch basis, and they'll obviously have like a much smaller yield, and there'll be a lot more variability in the process. But even just a 55 gallon drum can be repurposed into an oven for a backyard gardener, and it works really well.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Can you tell
us? Yes.
Give us a visual. What kind of a kiln do you use? I take it you produce your biochar on the farm rather than acquiring it commercially?
We're going to be producing it. We're going to try out a trench kiln, which is a trench in the ground about 30 to 50 feet. I think it's about 15 feet deep. And it's just as low-tech as that, just starting some fires in the bottom and then throwing our biomass on top of it.
So you start some fires, and what kind of biomass do you have?
We're using walnut.
Oh,
we have walnut orchards, and we removed an entire 50-acre plot of walnuts last winter, and they've just been drying, and that's the perfect kind of feedstock is dry wood.
And so can you use parts of the trees as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually not using any shells. Nuts or anything, we're just using the wood.
I see. Okay. And then how do you make it airtight so that you don't, so that no oxygen can escape?
So it's, you start the fire at the bottom, and then the way it was explained to me, obviously, because I'm not an expert in this by any means, but you, when you add the more feedstock on top, it kind of snuffs the oxygen out itself. And I'm sure even Richard could explain better because I know he's been doing this for a lot more years than me. But I think the process itself snuffs the oxygen out.
Mm-hmm.
And you said then it sits there for several weeks. Is it smoldering for that length of time?
No, so you've got to, if you let it smolder for that length of time, it'll just burn down into ash eventually, which isn't very helpful. But you quench it with water, or you can snuff it with soil to stop the burning process.
And so what does the material like? How big are the pieces of wood you put into it? Like, are they logs, or are they chopped up? Or
yeah, it just depends on your oven. For our trench kiln, we decided on that because our feedstock is a lot of limbs and a lot of, like, bulky, long pieces.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we just wanted to reduce the processing part of it, so we just figured a trench kiln would work for us. For some ovens, you might have to grind it or chip it, especially in industrial biochar making, because they want a more uniform product.
And so when it comes out, does it look like charcoal briquettes, or is it in smaller pieces, or what does the material look like that you harvest from the kiln?
It kind of looks like charcoal briquettes. I would say more if you look at, like, the bottom of a campfire after it's burned out. Just some burned up wood, really.
Yeah, this is really helping me. I'm seeing it. Mm-hmm.
Here's my wise guy comment. It sounds like you could also, while it's burning, do a Hawaiian luau. Tuck some chickens and pineapple in there.
Absolutely, I've thought of it.
Got a pig? We could bury him in there. So, have you been producing your own biochar? Is this a new kiln? Have you used other things?
So we haven't used the trench kiln yet. We did one kind of trial run, which was using an actual pyrolization oven called the Burn Boss, which was like a manufactured, kind of more commercial kiln. It wasn't the DIY one. And we got really good results with that. But we're going to be trying out our trench kiln for the first time.
You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Josie Storm. She's a farmer in East Biggs. She's telling us about biochar, how it's made, and how it works.
Why, Steve said, just ask the questions we told her we're going to ask, but why aren't more farmers, why aren't more farmers, why isn't this a more widespread use? I mean, it seems like it's a win-win-win-win-win if you can get rid of biomass that, like, we lost a lot of fires in the, lost a lot of trees in the campfires that are, you know, partially burned but not completely burned. And we primarily grow herbs and flowers, but it seems like especially the water retention, but also, I mean, the nutrition retention too seems really so important to farmers. How widely is it used, do you know?
I know it's not as widely used as I think it should be. Yeah. I actually just heard of it myself. I know it's been around for a really, really long time, but my dad describes it as a unicorn. He knows it exists, yeah, but he's never been able to catch it, yeah, make it work for himself. But I think there's not the right infrastructure to make like biomass recycling into biochar a thing, and I think people just don't know enough about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what I would like to contribute to, if we can get more research on the subject and characterize biochar, to say what is good biochar, how do you make good biochar, and importantly, how do you make bad biochar. You can guide people on the process and it'll be less variability and more positive results. And then also maybe making it more of like a communal thing, having a biomass recycling facility for an entire community, like everybody can bring their their biomass there, recycle it and get their own biochar. It's less of a capital demand on the farmer, you know.
And when we remember after the campfire, when we had all of this wood stacked, and people were saying, yeah, what are we going to do with all of this?
I actually went to a burn in Paradise where they were clearing some debris on a site of somebody's home, and I guess they've been using it in forest removal kind of a lot in Paradise and in other areas.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, I think that's a super, super important, even more so importantly than the agricultural application of it. I think that's so important.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I did want to ask briefly about the gases that are released.
Yeah,
you mentioned that carbon dioxide comes out presumably less than if you burn the stuff in an open flame, but also methane, and with everybody's worried about the amount of methane out there now, and some say it's many times more deadly than CO2, mm-hmm, in terms of global warming. What are your thoughts on that, and how much comes out in a biochar burn?
Well, I don't know if it can be zero, but the theory is that it's like a really clean burning technique, and that all that comes out is pure oxygen gas and pure hydrogen gas instead of the CO2 and CH4 or CH4 through that pyrolysis process that I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And when I witnessed it, I didn't even see any smoke. There was no smoke coming out of the fire. It was just extremely hot. And by excluding the oxygen, the biomass is forced to use its own volatiles and its own gases as fuel.
Okay.
And it's actually a carbon negative process.
So done right, it's not harmful at all.
Yeah, that's the important part, done right.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because farmers like us, we usually burn in open slash piles. And there's so many farmers burning so often, especially around here. It's like a cleaner option. If you have some biomass waste to burn, pyrolysis is hands down a great way to do it compared to burning it. But of course, I think there are downsides, and more so in the variability of the outcome of it than in the eco-friendliness of it.
So in the variability of how it's produced or how it's used?
Kind of in the biochar that you end up with, and then once you put it in your soil, its effects depend so much on what kind of soil you have that it's not the right solution for everybody, but I think it's a great solution for a lot.
So, I'm sorry, Steve. I got really...
Go ahead. You got questions.
I got really into this. what kinds of soils is it best for, and what kinds of soils is it not so good for?
So it's a basic product, so it's really great for acidic soils. But if you have alkaline soils, it'll probably do more harm than good. And then it's just also just different in different soils. Like in clayey soils, it'll aerate it. It'll make it less dense and compact, but you have to apply it differently than if you have a sandy soil, which it'll also help because somehow it does the opposite effect in sandy soils, and it keeps the water retained up towards where it's needed instead of reaching out towards the bottom. But you have to apply it a little bit differently.
So with clay soils, it provides more drainage, more space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we have. Okay, very interesting.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
And what are your plans to use it on? You've got this pretty large pit now full of biochar. Where is that going to go on your farm?
So we have set aside a 5-acre plot to apply it and monitor its effects. We set up the pyrolyzation oven pretty close to the plot where we're actually going to be applying it, and to the piles of feedstocks that we're going to be burning. So it's all right in the same area. And then we're just basically going to monitor it for 3 to 5 years and see where it goes. I have no expectations for it, but I just mostly want to see if there are any changes in like pH, nutrient availability, and especially if there are any changes in the walnut yield in the first couple of years and then in the long term. Because I've heard that the effects can drop off after a few years.
Mm-hmm. So are you seeking any kind of grant funding for this research that you're doing? It sounds like.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, they come by when they come by. But a lot of government, agricultural, and environmental agencies tend to fund stuff like this. So we're just scouting out the field and seeing what's available that fits within our time frame.
So with your 5-acre plot, are you comparing it with another similar plot in terms of how it works?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to be comparing the things in the biochar plot to a control plot of native soil just from the untreated regular orchard soil that was already there. And then we're also going to compare it to a plot of just a compost-only application because some of the benefits from the inoculated biochar are just undoubtedly going to come from the compost alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we have two different varieties of walnut feedstock, which I don't think we'll see much difference in the results of the biochar from those, but we're going to keep them separate just in case.
So what kinds of outcomes will you be looking for to determine the effectiveness, the amount of water, the yield?
Yeah, so yield will be really important, especially the soil nutrient availability, and see if we get any health perks for our trees. But a big part of this is, besides the crop health, which is obviously important, is the economic viability. We want to compare the costs and see if any of our inputs for water or chemical fertilizers are lower on our biochar plot compared to what we would normally spend.
Mm-hmm. Really? Sounds really smart. Go ahead.
Can you get academic credit for this?
I was thinking about that too, actually, Josie. I think that I was thinking about your master's degree, actually.
About my what?
I was thinking about your master's degree. When you finish your BA, then you should get a master's in.
Oh my gosh.
Ag with, you know, you've got your research study set up and you can just keep working on this forever. Okay.
Yeah, it definitely fits right into it.
Great. You're also seeking community participation in your project. Farmers, gardeners, and just people who are interested in sustainable ag. How do you plan to involve people, and can people get in touch with you if they're interested in learning more or participating in the project?
First of all, of course, anybody can get in touch with me. Best way is email, josiestorm186@gmail.com. It's josiestorm. But in my opinion, the best way to get involved is to see it for yourself. So I would love to hold some small demonstrations in a COVID-friendly way if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Burns take a lot of hands-on deck, so it can be kind of a community event in itself. And in my experience, it's like a really enjoyable way to spend the day. Mm. So I'd love to do a burn demonstration, maybe roast a pig.
Yeah, good idea. That would be a real draw, too. We're going to have pig when we're done with all this work.
Right.
So, how are you seeking these people? How are you, finding people that you, who will participate in this?
So, I'm really new to Biochar myself, like I said, but I found out that there's already a huge local community of people experienced with biochar here in Northern California. It's like a hub. I didn't know that, but I want to draw from their expertise every step, and I have been in touch with a lot of people, and our local NRCS is also aware and supportive of our efforts, and they're interested in what conclusions we might draw.
Are they possible funders, NRCS?
I don't know if NRCS itself does funding. I know they've directed me towards a lot of funding resources.
Very interesting. I wish you the best of luck. It sounds like you found a good community to do this and a good motivator from your dad.
I'm so excited. I think biomass recycling into biochar as a soil amendment is a great process and a great development, and it has a lot of potential.
Fabulous. Our guest has been Josie Storm. She is working on a research project with her family farm, family walnut farm, to see how biochar can improve agricultural practices. Sounds very interesting, and we really appreciate your making contact with us and coming on the show to talk with us. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. You too.
The sun shines down without a sound, feeds the plants growing on the ground, helps them grow in every way. My food is made from sunshine. I got energy to work and play, helps me feel good every day. Sleep better at night when I hit the hay. My food is made from sunshine. The sun shines down upon my fruits and veggies, grain. Shine through my berries, seeds and greens. The colors in my food seem brighter every time I dine, when I remember that my food is made from sunshine. Sunshine. Vitamins, minerals every day, a little bit goes a long way.
sunshine. Healthy, flexible skin and bone. Strong, athletic, muscle tone. A happy heart and an open mind. My food is made from sunshine. The sun shines down upon my fruits and veggies, grains and beans. Fills my life with sunshine through my berries, seeds and greens. The colors in my food seem brighter every time I dine. When I remember that my food is made from sunshine. The sun shines down upon my fruits and veggies, grains and beans. Fills my life with sunshine through my berries, seeds and greens. The colors in my food seem brighter every time I dine. When I remember that my food is made from sunshine. When I remember that my food is made from sunshine.
By the day we say, food and veg, okay. It's yummy in our tummy, we are fit and healthy, yeah. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes. 2, 2, 3, 4. Tino loves his fries and burgers, fizzy drinks all you can take, followed by a candy bar and a piece of chocolate cake. But he's getting big and bigger, he can't be a football kid. Tino, you need vitamins, they will make you strong and fit. 2, 3, 4. 5 a day we say, fruit and veg, okay. It's yummy in our tummy, we are fit and healthy, yeah. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes. 2, 2, 3, 4. Lisa really loves to eat cookies, cakes and jelly sweets, ice cream, pizza, mayonnaise, hot dogs and sauce hollandaise. But she's getting round and rounder and her teeth don't look so good. Lisa, it is time to change. You need healthy food. 2, 3, 4. 5 a day we say, fruit and veg, okay. It's yummy in our tummy, we are fit and healthy, yeah. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato and potatoes too.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight we're learning about biochar. It's a kind of charcoal that can sequester carbon, enrich the soil, and aid in water retention in gardening and farming. Our guest on the phone now is Richard Roth. He's a long-standing organic farmer and gardening advocate in our town. And for over a decade, he's been experimenting with biochar in his backyard garden in Chapmantown. Welcome, Richard.
I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you.
With you and Susan?
Yes.
Real honor to be invited.
Well, it's an honor for us to have you. I wanted to start by having you. You've been working for sustainable agriculture for a long time. You've promoted farmers, markets, farm to table. Give us a little bit, for those who might not know your background, What have you been doing in the overall sustainable organic gardening and agriculture movement?
Well, I grew up on a conventional farm in Kansas, and but it wasn't until I got to California and basically to Chico that I was working with a friend, David Graw, to do organic gardening and sell at farmers markets and local restaurants around. And after doing that for a few years, this is after I got my ag degree, worked for NRCS for a few years, then ended up quitting and moving back to Chico because I love the area. And so I broke away and started our farm, which was a market garden farm that I sold at local farmers markets, mm-hmm. and then started the first CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, in Butte County. Later started a couple of farmers markets that enabled EBT in Butte mm-hmm. County, and worked with a bunch of folks to get it available to all the farmers markets, which is a lot of fun. So,
and very helpful.
Yeah.
Very important. Thank you for doing that. That's a really important step.
Didn't do it alone, but yeah. It was an honor to have met some great people and fun.
So let's talk about biochar. When did you first learn about it, and how did you first learn about it?
You know, I'm not even sure. It's because of, you know, my interest in ag that I'm looking at sustainable things and carbon sequestration, the global warming reaction. But I think it really took off. I discovered that Butte College had a research project run by Stephen Fair out through the MESA program out there. And they had gotten a rice burners, a cook stove, that used rice hulls. And I called a bunch of folks and tried to get folks I thought might be interested in it to go out there. And we had a meeting and started networking with a lot of folks. Ended up going to some workshops and conferences. And my grandson ended up, unbeknownst to me, to get involved in the research project out there. Mm-hmm. And also one of the my classmates back when I was going to college was assisting John Chauvin. And my grandson happened to mention that I was his grandfather, and he goes, "Oh, Richard's the one that told me about biochar."
That's so cool. Yeah. Your grandson must have been very proud.
Cool. My status went way up.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So did they start actually creating it then?
The rice burner itself, they got two units shipped in from Vietnam, stainless steel containers to cook on.
How big is
it? It's about 3 feet tall and about, I'm guessing, 16 inches around. Hmm. And it's got a little grill. You light it from the top, and it burns its way down. The air is coming up from below. Mm-hmm. And once it gets down to the bottom, you squelch it. And you've got, as you burn the rice hulls, they stay in rice hull shape, but they've shrunk up. They've lost all the juice inside them.
Right.
So they're shrunk and black. And so, you know, you can fill it like two-thirds full or so and do your cooking. And when you're done, you've got about half that.
Okay, that's just what I was going to ask. So the volume is about half of what? You have the original material. Okay.
Or even less, maybe a third.
Okay, yeah.
It depends on the stuff that you're using, how much it shrinks down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what else have you experimented with besides rice hulls?
Well, YouTube is great because everybody likes to play with fire, and biochar is a way to play with fire, and so there's all these videos out there. And I think it was through that YouTube and stuff. Back when I was going to school in 1980, around there, I was involved with the North Valley Center for Appropriate Technology. And one of the members was Kelpie Wilson, who was the daughter of the president of Chico State. And she's ended up gotten her engineering degree and lives in Oregon. And she's been working with the Forest Service on getting biochar as part of their slash and burn program. And actually, she's been all over the world. She went down to the Terra Preta soils in Brazil, the soils that have all this char in them, to a depth of 6 to 10 feet. She's been around. She's quite the
and you have, advocate. I'm sorry. You have a couple of videos up on your own YouTube channel. One looks to me like a rocket about ready to take off,
the conical
one, and then another one where you're putting stuff underground, both, as you point out, pretty much made with recycled stuff. You don't have to buy a still necessarily to make your own biochar. Tell us a little bit about those experiments, please.
Well, Josie kind of nailed it with her when she talked a 55-gallon drum.
Mm-hmm.
So, something about that shape or smaller, you can dig a hole. That will serve, and you burn it in that. I put chimneys on top of the hole, and then fed the feedstock in through the side. My latest version is a 55-gallon drum buried a third in the ground, kind of, in a hole, with a hole to feed in the feedstock about the second third, and then a hole at the top, which puts it about stove length. So you've got a lid and a chimney on that, and so you could cook off of it, and it holds the heat down. I think it's probably one of the most efficient producers of biochar around, is those kind of things. You're saving your heat with the Josie talked about doing the trench burner. That heat's absorbed into the walls of the trench and reflected back. And so you're not losing heat like in an open flame, completely open flame. And that facilitates doing its job. And there's a little bit of confusion, I think, with what comes out the top. The methane gas is burnt. If the heat is driving those gases that are in the wood, it's wood gases. During World War II, they were running cars on wood gas. They had a 55-gallon drum in the back of the pickup and run, light a fire in it and somehow run it into their truck engine and they'd get around. And there's a place in Berkeley, actually, that's using wood gas and making pallet-size units that they're shipping all over the world for folks that can. And they're running diesel engines off of those.
Wow. That's amazing. So how is it captured?
The wood gas?
Any of the fuels that you can use?
I'm not sure. I've never really captured it. It's always been burned off right on site.
Right.
You know, there. I went to a Father's Day workshop over the weekend with my grandson a few years ago. We had down in Berkeley at his Alt Power Labs. They had this whole contraption where they're basically burning off the charcoal also. So it does produce charcoal, but only a fraction of what is out there. So they're burning off the wood gases, and then they're, if you heat it in the presence of moisture, it breaks apart. At a certain temperature, it breaks apart. The oxygen breaks apart the carbon, and it forms water and carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and the other thing that's maybe a little bit off was that the process is actually putting carbon dioxide into the air.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the thing is, it's not putting the charcoal carbon as carbon dioxide into the air. And the charcoal itself, because it just does not decompose, the long-term effect is that you're sequestering carbon. And my contention is, I read a really good book. It's 1491, two of them. 1491 and 1493, mm-hmm. before and after Columbus discovered America.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some insights just on how fire played a part in the Native American tradition of managing lands, surviving. And my contention is that when the settlers went and plowed up the prairie and turned over those really dark, rich soils,
mm-hmm.
those were man-made soils.
Oh, interesting.
It was a fire climax before, but when man came, his ability and use of fire to clear and manage property, to protect himself from animals, to protect crops from animals, pests, whether it's mosquitoes or mastodons, was the use of fire and to clear land. The last thing a prairie Indian wanted was a tall grass prairie that was all brown and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were burning constantly. And in part, it was the incomplete burns of those prairie grasses over as many as 30,000 years that build up the carbon in that rich fashion.
So so those processes enrich the soil over all of those years?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting.
Would conventional burning also produce some biochar? That is, if there's just a fire in a field?
In fact, the wildfires that we just had was probably the biggest biochar dump in the North State in the last 3-4 years since the campfire.
Mm-hmm.
Campfire and fire we had last time was, I took a microscope and looked at a leaf with all the ash and stuff that had fallen down here in Chico. And it was about half ash and half char. And under a microscope, you can see the little particles and because it really doesn't, a branch that you put into the charcoal will come out looking, say you put in a stem of a rose bush. It'll come out of that with the thorns on it. It's just black and carbon. And so you can, under a microscope, I could tell that it was either pine needles or a grass stem. A little chunk of it that had fallen here in Chico. So, you guys are good. You sent a list of possible questions.
Mm-hmm.
and talking about the safety applying char,
mm-hmm.
and it goes back to me, it made me think about that book, in the native use of fire, and looking at the evolution of humans, and I had to Google it today, but the latest evidence seemed to indicate that our ancestors, pre-human Homo sapiens, were using fire 1 million years ago. That's a fairly recent indication. It's much more before that, it was about 500,000 years. But what I realize, or the insight I have, whether it's right or not, is that those folks that came across the bridge, the land bridge, mm-hmm. they survived on their ability to use fire.
Interesting.
They were experts. They'd had over 400,000 years to develop that expertise. And so when they came into this new wild land, it expanded their own horizons and how they used it. But they were experts already.
Right.
And it was a major tool. They didn't have much in the way of metals other than gold, maybe some tin or something, iron. They didn't have the wheel, but they had fire. That's what they needed, and they were experts at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they also recognized the dangers of it.
Right. So go ahead.
Go ahead. In one
char,
of your
so
videos,
you've got, you show fire, us some... you've got char.
Yeah.
And if a million years or 500,000 years of producing char hasn't killed us or done something terrible, it's sort of a moot point. And I can argue with just about everybody who's making char because everybody's got their own ideas about it.
Right.
But those are my ideas. And one of the things is like, people are looking for the ideal char, the ideal temperature. And I don't think a prairie fire is an ideal temperature.
For
anything. It's a very mixed ecological variable. And so you're getting all kinds, a real rich mix of the byproduct of the fire in char form. And it has worked.
Right. So how do you use it in your farming?
My wife likes it. She does a lot of potted plants and some gardening stuff around. So, you know, she gets as much as she wants.
That's nice.
And then I get the rest.
Okay.
And she's got a little garden plot that she does basil and some other things with. And so that gets quite a bit of char. If I dig a hole to plant a tree or anything, I'm always adding biochar.
Okay.
I try to do no-till because I want green. I'd like to have green on the surface all year round.
Yeah.
And but I dug small trenches for my potatoes, and then I covered those, filled many of those trenches with the biochar that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making, you know, fairly small batches, maybe 15 gallons at a time, you know, enough to kind of fill a level wheelbarrow, small one.
So what do you see as the value in your and your wife's gardening? How do you assess the value of biochar?
Well, the biggest one is I guess carbon sequestration.
Okay.
We got to get climate change, or we're doomed. But I really think it's a part of a bigger picture. And the regenerative ag program at Chico State is wonderful. Whether it's they've got resources on composting and all these other things. NRCS is doing workshops on cover crops in the orchards. And
nice.
I would suggest to Josie and her dad, they do some experiments using a real rich mix of cover crops.
Mm.
They're using them mostly in almonds.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, young guy, built his own crimper roller, and I went to a workshop, and he demonstrated it a couple of years ago. And what he said is he can roll 200 acres of cover crop that is chest high in a day on one tank of gas.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's adding a tremendous amount of organic matter.
Yes.
A lot of diversity. I don't know how many different plants he had in his cover crop mix. But corn growers in the Midwest that are doing cover crops are growing as many as over two dozen different varieties in each mix.
Wow.
I can see, too, the mix of the cover crop plus biochar plus other processes. Hard to measure the results in that case, but
no,
it seems like using
the,
everything
the guy,
available.
I wish I knew his name. I'm not good at remembering names. Mm. But he's a young guy. He built his own thing. He got a national award from, I think it was an NRCS professional. The RCD. RCD,
okay.
National
right.
RCD.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
For his work.
Nice.
We're about out of time, Richard. Really appreciate your talking, and I appreciate the videos are great because they show you tinkering, making stuff out of recycled material, not spending a lot of money on it. Gives us a good sense of how you're making the biochar. And we also really appreciate your not only your service to our community, but your spirit of experimentation with all of these things. Our guest has been Richard Roth, a local sustainable agriculture guy, tinkerer, Matt Jack of all trades, I've got to say it, even though it's a cliche.
Thank you so much for having me. It's
thank
been
you,
really
Richard.
Fun.
Thank you so much, Richard.
By the day we say food and veg, okay. It's yummy in our tummy, we are fit and healthy. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato, and potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Potatoes too. Every day an apple, two carrots there for you. Broccoli, bananas, a tomato, and potatoes too. 2, 3, 4. Tino loves his fries and burgers, fizzy drinks all you can.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico, exploring ecosystems. Be sure to visit our website for notes and recordings of recent programs, plus our ever-growing list of resources provided by your guests. Our guests, not your guests, our guests. The website is ecotopiakzfr.com. We also welcome your comments and suggestions. The reason that we talked to Josie today about her farm in East Biggs, Josie Storm, was she contacted us. And she said, I have something interesting that I would like to talk about. And then we knew Richard was working in the same way. So often programs put together because you have really great ideas and they should be shared with the community. So if you have great ideas, please contact us.
Coming up in just about a minute and a half, it'll be North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. She features interviews with local nonprofits that are doing good for the community. Her guest tonight will be from the North Valley Community Foundation. And then at 6:30, it's Radioactive with Ginger Nichols. As always, an eclectic selection and a lot of great commentary.
And lots of fun.
She's
such an upbeat person. We have upbeat shows, too. Like, this was a good one, but you can always count on Ginger to be upbeat. So, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
You are the new day. Yesterday, if you can but prove to me you are the new day, send the sun in time for dawn. Let the birds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me, say.
North North State Give and Take up next is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Kinney Nursery and Topsoil. Celebrating 50 years of providing bulk soils, organic fertilizers, high-octane soil amendments, and a large selection of landscape materials. Kinney Nursery and Topsoil